Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture with members of the But Why Though writing staff. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined today by Kate.
Hi.
And Charles.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be talking about golden eras and kind of whether or not they are even real, whether or not they exist. But first, the news. There's a lot going on this week. There were two things. I wanted to bring positive news this week, kind of at Charles' suggestion of the news segment is always sort of a bummer. So one cool thing we had reported, I think, here, if not on the site, that Microsoft kind of unexpectedly shut down Tango Gameworks, a development studio in Japan. This is the people who made Hi-Fi Rush. But half of that staff is now switching over to Krafton, and Hi-Fi Rush will continue there. And I thought that was great news. Like the games industry has been so laden with layoffs and garbage that when Charles sent me this headline of like, oh, the opposite, I was like, cool, we need to talk about this. So yeah, Charles, do you have any thoughts on this or how did you find out about it?
I mean, I heard about it and, it was all over my Twitter, of course, because several people I follow, keep up with gaming news, and the concept of something happy occurring was just definitely a big thing. I mean, of course, obviously it goes without saying, Krafton's a big company. They're doing this because they think it's a right business move, but for once a smart business move and a happy thing can just kind of coincide, which is rare. So great to hear.
For sure.
I'm really excited just because I think Tango Works deserves to keep living on in some form. I think the only thing that I am sad about is they only maintain the rights to Hi-Fi Rush. So they don't have the rights to Evil Within or Ghostwire Tokyo. That stays with ZeniMax, which I think is a really important thing to note. Which makes it seem like the sale was very much this studio produced one of the best rhythm games in existence at this point and, you know, succeeded overwhelmingly with a Shadow Drop. We're going to save them for that. But it does kind of, you are left with we're still at only half the people, which I'm assuming the half that they kept are the people who worked on Hi-Fi Rush.
I would assume
it's exciting no matter what, because I think at this point we're so used to studios entirely closing and nobody being retained.
And just IPs being left to rot. And I think something really cool here is that they've already said, hey, we're expanding Hi-Fi Rush. It's a game that I need to go back and try it again because I kind of bounced off it the first time. But I saw how much it resonated with people and how much people loved it. So the idea that it was just going to disappear overnight was incredibly frustrating. So to see this, you know, last minute save, which again, like you said, it's a business move, but it is saving something that people loved and giving us more of it. I want to, you know, celebrate that.
And I do wonder how much more this is going to happen, both with the South Korean and the Chinese companies coming in to save some of these studios that have been shrugged off. I know that because Tango Works was a Japanese studio to begin with, there's a little bit of that. They're not having to deal with the direct American market in that, like, it was a studio run out of Japan has different laws, all that type of stuff, than American studios specifically. But it is going to be interesting to see how South Korean studios, which are on the rise, if you look at things like Nexon, and then of course Chinese studios, which are kind of doing the exact same thing, if they start investing more in buying the remnants of studios past, and whether or not they restaff them with the development teams that made the games, or if they kind of rehire new teams. Because that's the one part of game dev that I don't think a lot of people think of, that I think of when it comes to like hiring and working at a studio, is that just because, like, if they had just said, we kept Tango Gameworks, but we did not keep any of the employees, then it's like, well, you're not going to make Hi-Fi Rush again, because that is very specific to the development team that did that work, that had that flow and that worked together to solve problems. And so it's going to be interesting to see, like, kind of what the ripple effects are for this, especially because a lot of the studios that have been shuttered have big name properties attached to them.
Yeah, I think there's also this weird thing that I'm realizing, because whenever a movie is announced as getting a sequel, I have this like visceral frustrated reaction, because not everything needs a sequel. But I feel like video games almost have the opposite problem, where games are made, and then it's like, oh, it underperformed by $1 million according to our budget, so we're going to axe it. So seeing companies, if this becomes a trend of like picking up the scraps that big studios are dropping once mm-hmm. it's been established and doing something new, I'm actually kind of excited about that because I feel like sequels to me make a little bit more sense with video games than they do with movies.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think that's just, it's potentially, like you said, like just to see what the ripple is, see where this goes is going to be very interesting.
And not to be the Debbie Downer, but it is just also like we are asking for one corporate overlord to come in and save these other studios that have been cast out by another corporate overlord. So it is the one fear that comes with it, too. But
for sure.
Yeah. Because, I mean, who's to say that like Hi-Fi Rush 2 doesn't do the way that they want? And so it just happens again, you know?
Yeah.
Like there's so many risks. And yeah, I'll just be interested to see where it goes. And then for our second piece of news, Kate, I don't want to put you on the spot too much, but Alien Romulus is good, is it everything
slaps.
That I'm seeing online.
It slaps.
And like, after Prometheus and Covenant went the way that they did, I was like, this is a good news segment, is to just talk about like, it's good. People are into it. From everything I've heard, it's like, this is Fede Alvarez doing his thing. It, you know, it kind of tracks with the first movie, but like with that elevated gore, elevated tension, like mm-hmm. it is the Alien movie that people have been waiting for.
Yeah, it's what I've been waiting for. I think that's actually how I closed out my review for the site, because like I have been craving that atmospheric tension, that horror, the creature feature, the slasher of it all. I've been craving all of the things that made me fall in love with Alien. And I think that getting to watch it in a theater with one of my best friends, we were both grabbing each other. We were jumping. Mm-hmm. It is an effective film. I don't think it's a perfect film. I think that there are a lot of flaws in the characters, but that also may just be because Alien and Aliens are perfect films. So getting close to them is hard. But I think what Fede Alvarez does is, he really establishes the fact that if you gave him the keys to the kingdom and let him keep it for another two movies, I'm gonna show up. I'm gonna watch it. The set design, the score, the practical effects usage, all of that was so on point that I felt like I was transported back to the world that Ridley Scott started, and it is what I want. Mm-hmm. It is good.
Yeah. And one thing that I remember seeing that I thought was interesting is even when the trailers were out, somebody screen capped it and they were like, oh, look, a save station from Alien Isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And so like it's not just homage to the movies. It's also like pulling in from the games and just coming at it with a respect and love for the franchise.
Yeah.
Which I think there's a lot of young directors who would jump at the chance to make an Alien movie and make it theirs and skip straight past all of that homage and care and tact. So to see that this movie didn't do that and was faithful and attentive is very encouraging to me. And I'm excited to go see this one in theaters for sure.
And I think very specifically for those who may not know what to expect and haven't watched Fede Alvarez's other films, he did, Legacy of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Girl with the Spider's Web, Don't Breathe, and Evil Dead are his two best of what he did. And I think that what really works here in Alien is, it does my favorite thing in space horror. It reminds you of the danger and confinement of space. And I think that the elements that made Don't Breathe, the 2016 one, so good is what allows him to make a really effective mm-hmm. space horror film.
For sure. I think that, I mean, he obviously has like a pretty good range as a director, but I feel like the claustrophobia and isolation seems to be something that he's really good at playing with effectively. Just with like Don't Breathe, you know, largely being in that house and all that. So when they announced he was doing this, there was a part of me that was like, is this just because he did Evil Dead? But then the more I'm thinking on it, it's like, oh no, it's because he genuinely is a very good match for this property.
Yeah. And I also love to see Latinos win. Let's go, Uruguay.
News out of the way, on to the main segment. This episode is about golden eras, but for me, it was very heavily inspired by The Simpsons. It's a show that I grew up with. I don't watch it regularly anymore, and I haven't in a while, but I go through phases of watching it. And I'm in one of those phases right now, which is kind of what got me thinking about this. So I want to preface what I'm about to say with, like, this is not a Simpsons episode. I'm just going to use them to introduce the concept for the listeners. So bear with me. It's an easy in. For those of you who don't know, The Simpsons premiered December of 1989. It's an animated sitcom. It's intended as like a satire of modern American life. It had a bunch of video games. It had a movie. It had albums. It had mountains of merchandise. And as of October, it has a season 36. And despite lasting that long, it is a show that is widely considered to have fallen off. I think for at least 25 years, that's kind of been how people feel about this. People tend to say that what they enjoy is the golden era, which I don't know how familiar you guys are with The Simpsons, but when would you place the golden era if you were to believe in one?
I feel like for me, like if I needed to like trim it down, I mean, like anywhere from like season 4 through season 11 ish, maybe there's a peak of like 3 seasons somewhere in there, but depends on my mood. Like I can think of so many great episodes in that period.
Okay. Kate, do you have a guess?
I don't know. Maybe like 7 to 14.
Okay. So the start is usually considered to be seasons 1 or 3. Some people say 4. The ending, I can think of like 7 different places where people think it ends. Some people have said that there's like an episode in season 6 that ends it. An episode in season 7. The end of season 8. The episode 2 of season, like there's all of these like very specific episodes or seasons where it's like this is where it drops off. Anywhere between season 6 and like season 13 is where like the end is supposedly. Mm-hmm. Now in what I'm doing right now is I'm kind of forcing myself to watch episodes I haven't seen, which is largely in that, you know,
I think that's the hard thing. I have not seen every episode of The Simpsons.
No, same, but it does start to decline. I think season 8 is solid. 9 is a little bit of the start of the decline. In my opinion, I think by season 12, it's like it is enough hit or miss that I no longer consider it to be like the good seasons.
As long as you go past season 10, because that has the VH1 episode in it, and that is to be on there.
And that's a super fun one. But like the thing for me was when I saw how many people had different opinions on when it ends, it kind of gave me a lot of hesitation around the idea that it's real at all. I mean, and it's possible that it is real, but it has very vague boundaries. So I guess like with that out of the way, to introduce the concept, where are you guys coming from with this? Like, do you believe in golden eras, or like, do you have any that you point to as like, yes, this is like some definitive proof?
It's hard. Go ahead, Charles.
No, go for it, please.
I was gonna say it's really hard because I try to think about like what I would qualify as the best, and I'm just kind of like, oh, but is that the only like spots that I saw? So I think South Park has that, because they're like, I still rewatch South Park when we go to hotel rooms, just because it's an easy like turn your brain off show. But like there is like my high school years, South Park was like, that was really good, and then as I grew up out of South Park. And I think that there were notable shifts in, like, the changes of things. And I think that, like, I think I believe in golden ages, but I think that it's a highly subjective time frame, if that makes sense. I think that there's a lot of personal stakes invested into it. I honestly think of, like, golden age, I think, like, The Office, which didn't go on forever, but, like, we will rewatch The Office, like, maybe once a year, once every 2 years, and Matt will stop watching at the last 2 seasons, because he's like, it's done.
Okay.
And then if you look at something...
I was going to say The Office, the golden era, is, like, seasons 3 to 6.
Exactly.
And then after that, it starts dropping.
Exactly. And then you also have something like Parks and Rec. While I've rewatched that show multiple times, very similar to The Office... I start at season 3.
Golden era starts when Brandanowitz leaves.
Yes, exactly.
Because that's also when the show figured out what it was, I think.
Yeah, so I feel like there can be a core concept of... There can be a core concept of a golden age, as in this is where the show hit its stride, and this is where it tapered off. But I think depending on like when your entry point is going to really inform where you are, because especially with these old...
Yeah.
I would say specifically with syndicated television. With syndicated television, you, for a long time, you could not go back and watch all the episodes. And so there was no way to do it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I think a mark of a golden era episode of any show, because I'm trying to approach this conversation with the mentality of like, yes, golden eras are real. Like, it's any episode that if you caught it in syndication, you would sit down and watch the whole thing. And anything that you like, if you turn on the TV and you see an episode of The Office and register what one it is, and you're like, eh, I'm good, and you like change the channel or walk out of the room, that's probably not a golden era episode or not a good one.
Yeah.
I think also with South Park, tell me if this sounds wrong, you can tell when it's shifting out of the golden era because it's when they start using these increasingly complex character models.
Yes.
I think that for me is like, this is the indicator of like, oh, you're in a new era and I don't know that I like it.
No, I agree. And I think like, I think my comparable show that I have watched everything of multiple times and went for a very long time that I can add to the conversation is Supernatural. I think
the show that just won't die.
Yes. I think after its second attempt at death, it is just all gone. It is just all terrible. I still watch it because it's good trash, but it's like not like, yeah, it is something different. And there are like episodes in there that are like, okay, cool. I'll watch this one because I really like Crowley's mom, or I'm going to watch it because Destiel's a thing. But I think if I saw it happening in the TNT block, I would not click away from it. Is that season one to like maybe season five? Maybe season six, but one to five. Like if you drop me into those on a syndicated like 10-hour block, if any episode popped up from there, I would just sit down and not change the channel and I would watch all of them.
Yeah. That makes sense. Charles, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that like anything that comes to the judging the quality of art, that of course there's a certain level of subjectivity to it for sure. However, yeah, I mean, like, I feel like if something runs long enough or has a substantial enough quantity of content that it's kind of natural to start looking at, like, when was it peaked? When is it, you know, good? Especially since, like, I mean, I still watch The Simpsons. I own, I think, through season 32 of The Simpsons. Okay. And in my opinion, like, is it as good as it was? No. Is the worst season of The Simpsons better than the best season of most other comedies? Yeah, to me. So, you know,
okay,
it is what it is.
Yeah.
I think a lot of properties have moments. It's more interesting to me, like when you have something long running like The Simpsons and you start seeing where like you said, most people have that stretch of time, like season 3 to 11, 12-ish, that like generally you're in there somewhere. So like that's when it starts coming feels almost more like there are certain things, or like sometimes you'll hear like, you know, a genre or a medium is going through its golden era. I feel like there's been like two or three different periods in my life I've heard people talk about that with horror. I remember when I was in high school and like all the Wes Craven slasher stuff was coming out and people were like, oh, this is a golden era of slashers, or, you know, things become popular. Or like I always think of the Xbox 360, PS3 era as the golden era of FPSs because every game that mattered was an FPS. Like, I even think back sometimes to, like, you know, like games like Bioshock, and I'm like, if they made Bioshock today, would that be an FPS? That would be a third-person view action adventure game.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because nobody remembers it for the shooter mechanics. It's the world. It's the storytelling. So I feel like there are those times when, like, something is, like, getting so big and, like, and it's at its peak, and then, like, it's just never the same again. Now, granted, there are times when that can get tough if something runs long enough. Comic books are a great example of that, where like they just keep going. Superhero comics at least just keep going. You know, the X-Men, people say Claremont is still the greatest X-Men writer. Granted, he wrote it for 16 years, so you're bound to have some hits. You know, that was,
well, you know, comics, that actually raises an interesting point, because the conventional wisdom I've seen with comics is read the characters that interest you and then figure out of what you have read which writers and artists interest you, and then follow that instead, and that's how you stay happy as someone who reads comics. And so that's kind of funny, because yeah, people will talk about here's the golden age of X-Men. It's like, no, you just like Claremont.
Yeah,
like, you know, yes, you also like X-Men, but like, you know, have you expanded and read his other work? Is it the writer that you're enjoying, not the, you know, not that?
Definitely.
And I think that's where TV has, you know, kind of the same thing, because you'll look at I mean, to go back to The Simpsons as an example, who was in the writer's room?
Yeah.
Or I think an even better, I think like the most one-to-one comparison for that would even be Doctor Who.
Yes, yes, oh, actually, okay.
Like,
yeah.
Do you love Doctor Who or do you love Russell Davies?
Yeah.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And that also can kind of also like, there's a strong argument you can make for the nostalgia element of the golden era, because so often, you know, there's the old joke that your favorite Doctor is the first one you watch.
Yes, 100%.
Mm, yep.
I think the only reason that's not true for me is because Eccleston's run has so few episodes.
Eccleston is that, actually, still, you know, my favorite.
He's your favorite? Okay. Tennant's mine, but like that.
I love Tennant. Very close second, but oh god, Eccleston's season is so good.
And I think that like really points to kind of the crux of it is like, I think that there is a set of conditions that you can look at. I think you have critical acclaim, being beloved in general, fandom explosion, becoming a pop culture icon, essentially. Like if somebody, like somebody can play the opening, just like the like first five chords of the theme song for The Simpsons, they know exactly what you're getting into. And then you also have to layer on, like what Charles mentioned earlier, that nostalgia effect for it. Like, where do you kind of fall in line for it? Because you mentioned horror movies, and I do think, like, you have golden ages for specific shows. And I would even argue that, like, it's weird. I do think that genres and subgenres have their golden ages as well, but I think that they're more almost explosive, kind of like what Charles said, where like they explode, you get really good ones, and then they never come back. And I do think like 90s slashers, early aughts slashers, like that was the top, that was the height in a way, but that was also like the death knell or like the death of slashers as well, right? Because like they're coming off trajectory from the 70s. And I think that that's really interesting when you think about, like, a golden era defining something more than one particular franchise.
Like, this isn't just about Scream, this is about slashers. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't just about Wes Craven, this is about all of horror.
Yes.
Because, that was the thing I was trying to figure out, is, like, what, you know, like you were saying, the conditions, because, I mean, the obvious one is there has to be enough of it for there to be an era.
Yes.
A show that lasted for 2 seasons, there is no golden era. There are good episodes and bad episodes.
Mm-hmm.
But a show like Doctor Who that, you know, ran forever, or The Simpsons that has run forever, like, that's where it's like, oh, yeah, there's, like, defined eras where you can see these, like, tonal shifts. And with shows, sometimes that's marked by production quality, or, you know, what actors are, like, I mean, you know, there's I hate to reference this, but a show that I think, and I want to be clear, I, Jason, apologies, I don't give a shit about this show that I'm about to mention, but for the people who do care about it, there is the Sheen era of Two and a Half Men and the Kutcher era of Two and a Half Men.
Man, I thought for sure you were going to say something about Star Wars. I did not expect.
Oh, no. I just like that. Like, that's a show where it's like, oh, there's very defined eras to this. Yes. And there are people who are like, yeah, the second era shouldn't have happened.
And I do think that, I think eras in TV is just really going away in general, because we no longer have true long form programming. Like, we don't have the 24-episode
like Netflix isn't
anymore.
Going on. Wait, when did Stranger Things premiere before I burned Netflix on this?
Well, it's also
tough.
I don't know, but
those children are in their 30s now, so.
As I was gonna say, it's also tough to do now with modern television, because there isn't the it's got to come out every year thing anymore either.
Well, so here's the thing. If we were still doing that, Stranger Things would be going on season 8 right now.
Mm.
It came out in 2016.
All 6 episodes per season of it, which is still less than anything else.
Right. It's kind of incredible that it has taken this long. But yeah, that is a good point that like it's harder to get eras with modern stuff. I think what you get is now is where we're shifting into more genres. Like I don't know enough about like reality TV for this, but Kate, I'm sure you can point to like specific eras or golden eras for like subgenres of reality TV where it's like, oh, this is when that was at its peak.
Oh yeah. 100%. And I think I think the thing with eras as well is I think a way that defines it is also that it has to be so good that it boomerangs back around to get where things were. And I think that we're seeing that now with the resurrection of a lot of survival shows trying to catch what OG Survivor was. Because I would say there are 43, 44 seasons of Survivor at this point. I've seen 40 of them, 41 of them. Golden era. It's weird because you have like the golden era as the intro for like seasons 1 to 15, or probably like 1 to 10. And then it like is a lull. And then once you bring in like the more complex tribal structures, then it gets good again. And then you just start bringing back everybody and you're like, okay, it's awful again. And it's, but I think what's happening is right now you have Alone, you have Outlast, you have, I can't remember the one that's on NBC, but there's one where like they race through the wilderness and they're all like different like backpackers and survivalists and all that stuff. But all of those things come together and it just makes me think, okay, cool, we're trying to get back to that. Or like even Deal or No Deal moving to be Deal or No Deal Island, which is adding in the physical survival components that you have from Survivor, but you just
They made an island version of that show.
Look, you tapped into a hyperfixation. Housewives, Real Housewives, also have eras. Vanderpump was the best that Beverly Hill was. When NeNe left, that was when Atlanta died. And I think that like, if you want to, to add in another element, I think that there is an actor, a person, or a linchpin that holds everything in place in that golden era that once they're gone, you can feel the effect of it.
Okay, so there's like a creative somewhere in the process that is just so
creative or talent. That is,
No, I think that makes a lot of sense because that goes back to the writer's room thing. I think an interesting example for this too is Futurama, which has been resurrected, is it 3 times now?
Yes,
I think it's been resurrected 3 times.
Yeah, it got
once on Comedy Central, once somewhere else, and then once on Hulu. Is that right?
It depends on how you count it, because there was the original run, then they did the movies,
right?
Which then kind of got chopped into TV seasons.
Oh yeah.
Then you
yeah.
have the season on Comedy Central. Then you have the Hulu. So whether or not you count the movies and that Comedy Central season as one or not. But yeah, it's come back a couple of times now.
Yeah, well, and that's an interesting one because they tend to bring back, I think, to my understanding, a lot of the same creatives. Like the voice actors are all the same. David X. Cohen's always there, but it feels different. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if what we're feeling is producer notes, like studio notes, or studio interference, or if it's just that like the magic was kind of lost.
Yeah.
I do still watch and enjoy Futurama. Like I love that show. But there is something very different about those first 4 seasons. And I think it's probably, like you were saying, Kate, something to do with that. Somebody in the process stepped back in some capacity and you just feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I think also with like Futurama is also another great example. And I think it's part of the reason why The Simpsons have managed to stay on while also simultaneously not being as good is the fact that like Futurama doesn't hit like it did in 1999. Like the humor that we have today is, it's not standing out. It's like, oh my God, they did that joke. They said that thing. It's like, yeah, okay, that was a weird fun thing, but I get weird fun things all the time now. So like, it's kind of stuck between that. It's not as edgy as the edgiest comedy. It's not, you know, Rick and Morty, but it's not, but it's edgier than The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. So like, is it really in a spot at all anymore?
You're now making me question how Family Guy is still around.
Because it's also died and been resurrected multiple times on different networks.
That's a good point. But yeah, that's a show where I'm like, when you said the thing about like, oh, like this is edgy, this is whatever. I'm like, yeah, Family Guy was like pretty edgy when it started. And then it went really edgy when it got brought back the first time. And then I don't know what, like, I feel like it just kind of like blends into things, but. And so it maybe sometimes goes for like more shock value.
So
I just, they're coming up on season 23.
I think,
or it will be the next season.
I think what happened, and somebody had told Matt and I this at one point and it really clicked, was I do think that in these tail ends of these really long things, I think Simpsons is a good example. I think Family Guy is definitely a good example, but that the kids who grew up watching the thing are now writing the thing. And I think that there is a lot of emulation that happens there where you can tell that it is To the comedy note, I think why a lot of it doesn't work isn't because that comedy is outdated. I can rewatch all of Futurama and I still laugh my ass off. The amount of times that I say, well, I'm going to go make my own with blackjack and hookers is too high. And I realize
I almost referenced that when we were talking about game studios.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is like, and then if I say that in front of like the children's, they're like, why are you bringing up hookers? And I'm like, that's a Futurama reference. But
it's, I make it all the time.
Like, and I think that like there is this piece. How do I say this? Sometimes we should let things die because they do encapsulate their era. And when you have somebody from a current consciousness of comedy going back and trying to still hit the specific nerves that something like Futurama was hitting, you're having to emulate it because it's not the same touch points that are happening now in the state of comedy. And that's not saying that like nobody wants to be offended anymore. Like, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that there are varied styles of comedy. And you can tell when somebody is trying to live up to it versus naturally doing it. And I think that when you look at something like The Simpsons or Futurama, it has an iconic comedy pacing and an iconic comedy, I would call it a narrative, ultimately, that it feels in the later times, as writing rooms have changed, they're almost chasing the thing instead of leading it. And that's the part where it starts to kind of just Ouroboros itself.
Yeah. And I think, too, that that's the whole idea of, you know, the people who watch it are the people who are writing it and they're imitating what they saw. I think that's also where you get flanderization of just like, we're going to simplify a character, because it's like, oh, as a kid, I remember Ned, like, to go with the literal namesake, Ned Flanders is the religious guy, so we're going to write him as a religious guy and write religious jokes. But if you go back and watch early seasons, like, he's not, like, this, like, weird zealot or anything. He's just the Simpsons' nice neighbor. He has a little bar in his basement with a pool table, invites Homer over for a drink, like, whatever. And then the people who grew up with that were like, oh, but I remember that he's, like, a church guy, so that's the jokes now. And you end up with weaker writing as a result, because they're failing to grasp what made it good in the first place.
While I, in general, agree with what you're saying, I feel like Flanders is also just part of the shift in general American culture, seeing the nice religious guy as being the nice helpful guy and not the guy who's watching TV shows just so he can write in complaints when someone swears. I think that's partly just a shift in cultural view of that section in that particular instance, but I do agree. I mean, just like, you know, like going, like, you know, like when Kate was talking about Futurama, it made me think of, like, I remember I watched the first few episodes of the Hulu relaunch, and there's a moment where my favorite joke comes back from the early seasons when back in the early seasons when they're in trouble and Professor Farnsworth keeps being like, I should do something, but I am already in my pajamas. And because he's always in his pajamas, and like, that's the joke. And then they bring it back in the new one, but he's like in like this trench coat. And then he like reveals that he's in his pajamas. Like, it's like, no, that's not the joke.
Yeah.
Like,
you did it. That's not what made the joke work.
That's not what made it work. So I feel like there is a lot of that, like, people, like you said, writing for it. Definitely. It's,
yeah. Now, off of that, I have a question, because we talked earlier about how, like, you know, well, what's the best part of it? And I do you think that, and maybe it's just that that's a simplification, but like, is it being the best part what makes it the golden era? Because I feel like as we're talking this through, the thing that makes something a golden era is this is the time that it was truest to itself. Like, it was the best embodiment of what it was attempting to be. And I'm not sure if that's just like saying best in a different way, but I feel like, you know, The Simpsons is at its best when it is doing character-driven stories that also have jokes in them, where people have depth and complexity. And that's not necessarily always the funniest, but it is like kind of, to me, that's like the most iconic work. Like Lisa's Teacher, is that the episode title?
I think so.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, this is like, you're doing this like heartfelt story of like this kid finally feeling understood by an adult for the first time. This rules. And I don't know that we would get that episode in season 36.
No, but to be fair, I don't think you get that episode after season 3 at all. Like, season 7 doesn't have that episode. I think that's way too focused on the theme. Like, Simpsons after, I've always felt like that's why season 4, oftentimes season 4-ish, is like the stat point for a lot of people, is that that's when it feels like it becomes about comedy. and less like like seasons 1, 2, and 3 are like morality stories with jokes, and they make fun of things that. But like, I feel like those earliest seasons are the ones that are most narrative focused. Then you get to the ones where like, yeah, we're gonna talk about class struggle in Springfield with Madge wanting to get into the country club, and there's a commentary here, but it's a lot more about the jokes than it's there, but not. But I mean, like,
it's more about repurposing the pink Chanel suit.
Yeah, that and Homer becoming a great golfer and gonna put Mr. Burns in his place, and there is the moment where he doesn't, and it feels. But I feel like it is more jokes. But I do, but like, I do definitely see what you're saying. I feel like, I mean, like, that's kind of, and this, and I don't know if this is like a weird thing to bring up because it broadens it even more than just like a sub medium, but like, I feel like that is an angle that people I know who have talked about, you know, like, who oftentimes who are anime fans who talk about like the 90s as being the golden era of anime. Because we had DBZ, Cowboy Bebop, Evangelion. That was Sailor Moon too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sailor Moon, Sailor Gundam Moon,
like, as well.
So many of those icons, and it isn't like, and people view it as not being, oh, well, it's not weighed down by a lot of the sub-past stuff we get, because obviously we still get great anime every season.
Yeah.
But, and like, and that's interesting, because like, I feel like, and like, there's kind of that, I feel like there can be an argument made there in that way that like, it is so good, and it's what so many of us think of as being like a lot of the best elements of anime without a lot of the other stuff. But at the same time, I also sometimes wonder if that isn't also artificially created because we didn't get that much anime back then. Like, I don't know.
I was going to say, yeah, now is closer to a golden era because you can get Crunchyroll.
Well, and that's what I was going to say very specifically, is I think Americans are going to American, and that means that they're going to look at, like, what they got as the defining piece of an industry. When in reality, like, the trash anime was always there. I've seen some of it. I saw some of those fan dubs of really horrible things. But now people complain because you actually have legal access to watch it versus. Yeah. And I think like if you ask students now or like kids now, like they see like Midoriya and like these current shonen characters that are kind of stepping up to take the place of the people who are big for us. And I think that like that's really where the golden age issues come into play of like the subjectivity of it is that like what was formative when you were watching it? And if it was formative to you, then that then delineates where that is. Because, because if we go to slashers, just for, like, sake of example, not to go from anime to slashers, but I think it's a good example for me, very specifically, is that the golden age of slashers is supposed to be that early 70s to late 80s. And then you get into self-referential, and then you get into neo-slasher. Mm-hmm. But for me, that self-referential piece, like, that is my iconic piece. Like, those are the ones that I was so deeply in love with that they established my love for the slasher genre. And so that is my golden age, and that's what I want to get back to, and I get sad when we don't. And I think that when you layer in, like, what was good, I think in order to have eras in general, you have to, like, mostly be good. Because if you just have one good era and the rest is crap, well, then you just weren't good to begin with. But you also have to be able to navigate that. And I think that that's what makes it an interesting conversation to pivot back to anime in conversations. Like the big conversation in anime isn't necessarily golden era, golden age. It's more so like it's equivalent, but it's like the big three. Like who, like when you talk to somebody and you ask them who the big three are, you can learn a lot about them by how they define it. And I think that that's something that's really interesting. I'd be interested to know if anybody who's listening to this right now has a stance on, like, what is the golden era of One Piece? Because I've actually never heard One Piece fans discuss that. Like, they discuss it as a whole.
They're waiting for it to end.
They have over 1,000 episodes at this point.
Yeah, that's true. There should be an emerged, obvious, this is at its best. Because I feel like, tell me if this makes sense to you. I feel like this is a very subjective thing, but I think what a lot of these golden eras we've talked about have in common is it is when the thing being made feels unimpeded by the process. Like you don't feel those show notes, you don't feel catering to an algorithm, and when it feels celebrated both by the art itself and by the audience, like that's the golden era, is when it's like we are doing what we want. Like, it's this, you know, like again, going back to The Simpsons, which I said this wasn't a Simpsons episode, those seasons where they were just kind of doing whatever story popped into their head. They were hitting the emotional beats, hitting the comedy beats, all this stuff. And then there's the whole Bart Mania thing layered over on top of it, where like, you can't get away from them. If you go to the store, like, there's merchandise everywhere, like, being celebrated by culture. Everyone loves the characters. Fox is promoting it heavily. Like, and that is kind of the golden era. And then I agree with you. For me, my golden era with slashers is the 90s. And that is, I think, where... because I think with the whole 80s slasher being the prime, I disagree with that, because I feel like you forget about a lot of the bad ones that came out in that era. And it's kind of a rose-colored glasses mentality to say that that was the prime era for slashers. I think that's where you feel a lot of studio interference. Yeah.
So then, in that case, if I don't know, again, this is a little out of my genre, but as I have the horror people here, another horror thing I feel like that I think of as a golden era being a particular point, but it, I see where, like, fans could think of it as earlier. What about zombies? Because, like, zombies, from a commercial and cultural standpoint, explode with The Walking Dead. Even though we've all known zombies since the Romero, at that point, like, I feel like that's a, like, the at versus commercial, where, like, I feel like a lot of people I know.
I would put Golden Age at Romero, and I would put Golden Age at Romero because it was when zombies still had a message. Like, the act of becoming a zombie still had a message, and the act of, like, the virus itself still had a message. And I think that that is why I put Romero there. But you're not wrong. Like, The Walking Dead is when it came into popular consciousness again. Like, it was the resurgence that the subgenre needed. I think that we saw little inklings of it with the stint in the 2000s with Snyder's only good movie, Dawn of the Dead, and in 2003, and Shaun of the Dead. And then you also have
28 Days Later.
Yes, which that's, like, on the verge of not being a zombie movie. It's really an infection horror, but hey,
it really is right on the edge.
we're not gonna split hairs here, but yeah, I do think that that's interesting, because then is the golden era, it's weird, man. Charles, you're making me do some thinking, because technically by Alex's standards, being celebrated by the genre itself and celebrated by culture and the sheer amount of what is there, that is Walking Dead, because the Romero, it inspired things, but it was not everywhere.
And especially, I mean, like, and we tend to think of it only as the Walking Dead, but you've got the Walking Dead, you've got iZombie, you've got World War Z.
Well, so I was going to ask, is there enough other, because I feel like for a genre to have a golden era, there needs to be more than one.
Yeah, no, there were a lot.
I'm not sure how many there needs to be, but yeah, because I feel like when I think about recent zombie stuff, I guess I forgot about all those other ones. I just think of Walking Dead because it became so ubiquitous.
And it's warm also bodies. And that's also
love warm bodies.
And that would also be around, at least it was much earlier than the reboots, but like, there was still, I think, a good Resident Evil game or two. Dead Rising was on there as well.
Left
so you even
dead.
Got some. Left 4 Dead, for sure. So you even have, like, some game.
Okay, so maybe zombies had two golden eras, is kind of what
it
is.
An ad golden era in a commercial? I mean, I don't know.
Well,
it's
maybe,
tough.
Which I guess it's also, like, and this is probably, like, not, and we need a zombie episode for this, but there is also a clear delineation between the people who love fast zombies and the people who love not fast zombies.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and I think
that's
where the break happens, too.
Well, I think you could also say that, Just to double down on that as well, there's also the Romero, The Dead Are Walking, and then I think, is it Resident Evil that introduces the virus?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's also that break of, like, you could almost treat them as two different things, because once it becomes viral, then for me it gets a lot tougher. But
yeah, I hadn't thought about zombies in this conversation at all, but that was a really good one to bring up, Charles.
Yeah.
I do think, circling back, because we talked about nostalgia a little bit, I feel like oftentimes, not always, I don't want to use too broad of a brush, but people, when they talk about the golden era, there's that saying of, you know, the best seasons of SNL or whatever was on when you were in high school. So how do we differentiate a true golden era from some critical thinking that just happens to line up with your nostalgia?
I think a true golden era is met with praise from both critic and fan.
Okay, not the lopsided Rotten Tomatoes, you know.
Yeah. Because that shows that both sides are tuned into it. If you want me to go with the, like, the basis piece. Because I believe...
Yeah, no, I think that's a good argument. Is it's not just about... Especially because, like, anything will find an audience. Mm-hmm. Like, now that we have the internet, anything will find an audience. So that's not quite enough, so to speak, to be, like, a true golden era. It's just like, oh, yeah, this is when the right number of weirdos, you know, rallied on YouTube to watch whatever. Yeah, it's definitely different when it's being praised on both sides.
And I think that that's probably, like, the important part, too, because I think that there are... To bring up Supernatural again, I think seasons mm-hmm. 1 through 5 is the peak of the show because that 5 was, I think, like the first time it was going to be canceled. And you end up with the end of the world. You end up with some of its most iconic visuals. Castiel shows up in season 4, has a pretty finite story in 5. And you end up with something that is gold across with individual episodes that stick out because it's season 5 is the end of the world arc. Essentially you have the Four Horsemen, mm-hmm. the apocalypse and different Americana cars. And it was so good. I taught a class on it at UT. And I think what that does ultimately is like, if you look at the critic consensus, 1 through 5 is good and then everything falls off. And then I also wonder, too, like, you have critic, you have fan, but I do wonder, like, what about creator? Because Kripke stayed on as creator for pretty much all of Supernatural, but became less invested as it went on. So I'm like, does the creator's thought on, like, do they all, like, is it just, like, a triad? Creator, fan, critic, as all, like, being invested as their favorites?
That might be, yeah, that the center of that Venn diagram is like, this is it. Like, when it's the, you know, that album or whatever, that the artists, the audience, and critics are all like, yeah, this is my best work. And it's like, yeah, it probably is if this many people, this many sections are pointing to it as the best work. And that the Supernatural one just is interesting to me because it sounds like the looming cancellation pushed them to take some really big and interesting swings.
Yeah.
Well, I feel did that happen at later cancellation threats for them?
Mm-hmm. There were two. There were three total in Supernatural. Actually, Kripke is
and
only...
every time they got weird with it.
Yeah. And then it just became so unhinged that it was just like unbearable. But yeah, so Kripke's actually looking at like who were the focused of it. Kripke's really only there for 1 through 5. Like he maintains EP, but like his seasons are 1 through 5.
Mm-hmm. Well, wasn't Supernatural one? I remember I have a friend who was a big Supernatural fan, and I always heard that it was one of those. It was only supposed to be 5 seasons.
It was
like
only it, supposed
that
to
was
be three.
The story, and then it was like that's why the creator leaves. He's like, okay, I told the story, it's done. If you want to take it on, you know, go for it.
I think it was technically supposed to be 3 seasons, and then they got greenlit for 2 more, and Kripke didn't have 2 more seasons to spin up. And that's how he came up with Castiel and the larger idea of a devil to bring in the end of the world, because season 3 ends with Dean in hell. And then the other brother that we just mysteriously forgot went back to hell. and yeah.
The show's insane.
But yes, so I think that that's... We're kind of in the weeds now, but...
That's
the Venn diagram of creator, fandom, and critic. And I think that Supernatural seasons 1 through 5 really exemplify that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think this also brought me very, very strangely to another, I don't even know that I can call this a golden era so much as like a canon and non-canon era. And that is everyone's favorite other yellow boy, SpongeBob SquarePants, which do you guys know about this one?
No.
So the creator wanted it to end with the movie.
Oh,
he was like the movie's the end. I don't want more of it made. I don't want spinoffs. Then he passed away, and Nickelodeon decided to not respect any of his wishes. But like SpongeBob is supposed to end at the movie. It's the seasons before it and the movie, and that's supposed to be it. And there is a tonal shift. There is a creative stepping away. There is like all of these things that we've talked about of like marks of something exiting its era all happen around SpongeBob.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, like, my... Oh, go ahead.
No, go for it.
I was saying, I think my question off of that is if we look at, like, all these things that have been long-running with creatives kind of in and out, and I think, like, the long-running shows that are existing now, it really does make me question, is anything in its current, like, golden era? Like, is anything currently so good that it is hitting that lasting piece? Because I struggle to think of something, and I watch a lot of stuff, so I'm kind of like, huh. Even genre-wise.
Yeah. Maybe, is it a golden era for, to use the Scream's problematic term, elevated horror?
I was gonna...
Because I feel like we are getting a lot of, like, weird art house stuff right now, and that's a cool thing.
Well, see, this is my thing. I don't consider it a golden era because those things were always there. But we're stupid, filthy
Americans.
Okay,
that's a good point.
And we don't watch anything beyond our existing purview, and if it's not in a theater. So that is my only issue with that. I think that we are in a...
Yeah, no, that's...
Yeah, I don't think it's a golden era because I think what it did to the community around it is not good. And I know that that is at least something that keeps getting said by, like, people who are in horror, like, in the horror space. Because elevated horror is wielded as something to make horror be okay.
Yeah, it's the... I feel like elevated horror is and will always be something that people slap on it to feel good about saying that they enjoyed a horror movie,
yes.
Which is stupid.
Yeah.
That part of it has been what's always bugged me, is that people use it to justify liking it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there are, like, nobody would be like, oh, Alien's elevated horror, but everyone would agree that Alien is a good movie.
Mm-hmm.
So why we suddenly are so insecure about liking horror and need to slap this label on it is very silly.
Yes. Yeah, that is the only thing that I would push back on. We could be in the golden era of Oscar bait, because that's all we get now. From the months of July to December.
Yeah, and well, here's the question. Has the quality of Oscar bait gone up?
No.
Then it can't be a golden era. I mean, the only one that I can think of, and there are some big gaps for sure in my knowledge of this, so it may not, this is something that maybe Kate could even yay or nay on, but I personally... While there's one or two series from back in the day that I, you know, are super important and influential and all that stuff, if you told me across the board I had to watch an era of what most people think of as the iconic shonen anime, it would probably be now. Mm. Like, I love DBZ, don't, you know, it has its place, but, like, I feel like so many of the problems of, like, the... uber long battle sequences that go on forever, and, like, a lot of the cliches that were cool with the first time I saw it in Z, but then got old, like things like My Hero, Jujutsu Kaisen. These shows aren't perfect, but I feel like they've done a lot to move that subgenre of shonen into something that, like I said, if I had to watch it across the board, my favorite might not be there, but I feel like it's really good right now with doing better things with storytelling. But that's also extremely subjective.
No, I would agree. I was watching through Dragon Ball Z Kai with my partner, and at one point she was like, how much longer is this fight? And I was like, 8 more episodes. And she was like, how are there 8 more episodes? And I was like, you have to remember, this is going twice as fast as the original broadcast. Like, every episode
Frieza,
of Kai
it?
Is 2 episodes. It was Frieza. But yeah, I think I get what you're saying, where it's like, It was formative, but I don't know that it was, like, the era that I would want to go back to necessarily.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with this because shonen isn't a genre. It's a demographic.
Well, that's why I tried to say, like, that specific battle shonen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I think for battle shonens, I would say that we have way better battle shonens now than we used to, because there is more focus on the story to build up the fight versus... the fight kind of consumes all. I think the weird thing is, because I do think shonen is in a really good place now and a really interesting place now, but I also think it's in one of the most confused spaces now, because when we look at shonen, because I like, to be less specific, I've seen a lot of people talking about shonen being at its best right now in general, not specifying by battle anime.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that is interesting is because with us getting more titles, both in manga and anime, we're getting more quote-unquote shonen titles, but in their original runs, they're actually seinen. They're made for older audiences. And so you have, and that's something that's interesting. It happens with shoujo as well. You have a lot of josei titles that end up getting put into, classified as shoujo in the United States, because those are the only two, like Shoujo Beat and Shonen Jump are really the only two functioning publishing arms that we have right now, specifically coming out of Viz, and there really isn't anybody else to come up and kind of take that and showcase it in a different way. And so I think when we have like the larger conversations is, if I had to, I would say that we're in a golden age of anime overall because we have the most access to it. But I also think we're in one of the most confused spaces for it because the lexicon that Americans have to talk about anime is so stunted when compared to other places. And I think it's like very interesting. But Battle Shonen 100%. It's way better.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. I mean, and you can often tell times just tell that just going back to like you're mentioning the big three and how often the big three is just exclusively shonen. And it's like, no.
Yeah. I think I made the joke that Sailor Moon was one of the big three and this dude like popped a blood vessel at like an anime expo thing. And it was very funny.
I mean, I feel like in my head they're one of the big three. Like, I don't take fault with that personally. Yeah. Also, I was going to say, I can't think of a stream of a golden era that we're in now, but a golden era that we just exited was the golden era of streaming, if that's allowed.
Oh, yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah.
Because there was an era where there was like there was only a couple services, they had a bunch of stuff, their original titles were all bangers, and it has just fallen so far.
And now everything's dying. And you have a streamer like Apple TV Plus where it's all bangers, but nobody's watching it, so it doesn't matter.
Yep. Yeah, I love everything that I've watched on Apple TV Plus, but yeah, like you said, no one's watching it. But yeah, man, it was like the early to mid 2010s was just such a good era for streaming.
Yeah, it was. It was, and I was gonna say too, like just to cap off the idea of golden eras, I also think they have to get you excited for the future of things, and I think that that's like it's that leading, not chasing. And I do think that there is, like, if something is going to have a formative golden era in its run, in its genre, it has to get people excited for what is to come.
Yeah. You should be, whether it's the next episode, the next season, the next anything, you need to be looking forward. Yeah, as soon as maybe that's kind of a mark is, as soon as you are looking over your shoulder, that's when you're no longer in the golden era. Like, once you're looking back at what you had, it's over. Or once the new products are making you immediately compare them to the old ones is maybe a better way of putting that. Because I feel like, at least to go back to where this all started with The Simpsons, from listening to other people talk about it, a lot of them, where the golden era ends for them is when they watched an episode and went, huh, that wasn't as good as it used to be. And, like, that's, like, a very, like, specific thought that they had. And it's like, yep, that as soon as that thought enters your head, it's probably the end of the era for you.
I mean, I feel like that might be a little too, just because, I mean, I'm sure that you can go back and find duds in any, like, you know, I mean, you're talking, you know, the first 10 seasons of The Simpsons, you're talking like 200-ish episodes. There's going to be a dud in there somewhere. Like, there's gonna be something. I don't know.
I feel like even the episodes I don't care for in early Simpsons, I still enjoy. Is maybe where I'm coming at it from, because I remember seeing episodes where I'm like, oh, I straight up didn't like that. But that could just be me.
That's fair.
But I think that does it for this week. Unless you guys have any other closing thoughts.
No.
Mm-mm.
All right. Do you have any articles that you want to recommend or any media that you want to tell people to check out?
I I'm trying to think. Well, speaking of great anime, I've been covering Oshinoko and Nier Automata.
Mm-hmm.
Thank God Nier Automata is actually getting the back half of its season. I was worried for a minute.
Yep.
But those have both been absolute bangers. If you want deep 1,000+ word reviews, I've just been going off on every episode. They've been so intriguing.
Nice. Kate, what about you?
I
did read your Alien Romulus review.
Hey. So yeah, I was going to say, read my Alien Romulus review, watch our Alien Romulus video review. And then I would also say in the TV space, I just did a review for Pachinko Season 2 that releases on August 23rd on Apple TV Plus, the streaming service that I think everybody should have because all of them are bangers. This very specifically, if we're talking about Golden Eras, Pachinko Season 2, and I think Pachinko in general, has been a masterclass in understanding how to tell a story in a television medium in a way that I don't think we have seen in this era, in this current era, which isn't golden, of streaming.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everybody should watch it. It is one of the most beautiful TV series, and season two comes out even stronger than season one. So, yeah.
All right, that's awesome. I need to get back to... I read the book, and I watched the first couple episodes, but then I fell off with it, so I need to get back to that. My recommendation is going to be Simpsons-related. I just picked up... So the comic ended in, like, 2018. It's over. But they decided to do 3 omnibuses of the Treehouse of Horror segments only. So 3 big books, every single Treehouse of Horror story that they published over, like, 20-plus years... I have volume 1 and 2, and if you like The Simpsons and you like horror, it's just fun. They look very nice. They're these like big tomes. The covers are glow in the dark. They have these nice slip covers on them. Very like neat, like presentation and packaging. And then it's just like fun little short stories that are like, I'm not going to say spooky because they're not actually scary, but like it's, you know, it's Simpsons Treehouse of Horror and I enjoy it. So yeah, I would recommend that if you like comics, The Simpsons and horror, which is a specific Venn diagram, but for those of you that you're in the middle, you'll like this. Now, if you guys liked what you heard here, and if you want more, you are in luck. But Why Though is all over the internet, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Twitch. We are on Discord. We are on Patreon. If you want to kick us a few bucks so that we can keep the show going and making the content that you enjoy. And you can also follow all of us on social media. We're at But Why Though PC everywhere, right, Kate?
Yes.
I realize that I don't always say the handle, but Why Though PC, find us, talk to us. We'd love to hear from you. If you want to talk to me, I'm on Twitter at most always Alex. Charles, where can people find you?
People can find me on Twitter at Gatsu083.
And Kate?
You can find me at Oh My Mythrandir on everything.
Excellent. Thank you guys so much for joining me for this conversation. Thank you at home for listening, and we will see you next time.